Welcome to Michelle Speaks. I am your host, Michelle Lawrence. It's the middle of the day in the middle of the week, but you've tuned into the right show to get you over the hump. We will have riveting conversations about what I call the four W's: worth, wellness, wisdom, and wealth. So let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in his sight. Good afternoon, 860 AM listeners. This is your host, Michelle Lawrence. I am so excited to have yet another hour with you where we will discuss one of the four W's: worth, wellness, wisdom, and wealth. But we're going to get this show started like we do with every show, and that is with scripture. And this week's scripture comes from 2 Chronicles, the 7th chapter and the 14th verse, and it reads as follows: If my people, who are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and will heal their land. I've just read for you 2 Chronicles, the 7th chapter, the 14th verse. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading and hearing of his word. In this particular scripture, God is sharing these thoughts with Solomon after Solomon has already completed building the temple, the place that his father longed to build but was not able to. But God allowed Solomon to see it through. This is a place where he wanted God to dwell. He felt as though God would be present there and would have a home. And that is why he developed it. Today, we take a look at our current situation, and instead of welcoming and inviting God in, we have said, you're not welcome. His absence is felt all across this land. He's been removed from our schools, which has changed the environment and the culture for both the teachers and the students. The lack of his acknowledgement in our large corporations and our countries have weakened the very systems we once relied on and proudly touted that we were leaders in industries. The absence of God in our homes has created dissension where there was once discipline. It has propelled violence where we once had a village. Our communities are suffering because he is no longer welcomed. But there is hope. What God said to Solomon still applies today. When we humble ourselves, pray, and seek his face, he hears our prayers and promises to answer them. What I'm excited about is that there is still time for us to be restored. There is still time for us to mend what is broken, but only God can revive that which is dead. And so many folks are saying, what's going on and why are these things happening? It is time for us to rise up and to turn back and ask for repentance, to seek his face and to pray. Then he will hear and he will answer. But speaking about what's going on, today's song is a classic, a throwback from the 70s. Mr. Marvin Gaye's What's Going On.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. No, we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Hey, Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way.
wicked side. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
We've just heard Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, and given the current climate, I'm sure many of you are still saying, what's going on? But today, I'm glad to have in the studio folks who not only know what's going on, but have done some tremendous work in our communities and building relationships. And, you know, I'm so excited. I am literally trying to use every minute so that they can speak individually and collectively. And so we're going to get started. Today's is part two of Men of Honor, with a focus today on protect and serve. And in the studio with me today is none other than Reverend G. Lamar Stewart, pastor at Taylor Memorial, but also Philly's Finest. So glad to have you.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And my soul, S-E-O-U-L, brother from Baltimore. Now, you know you are loved when people drive from Baltimore to be with you. And so we have Chief Melvin Russell, who is also an assistant pastor, who is going to share their perspective today on what it means to protect and serve. But before we get to that, I want to pause and say thank you. I don't think that you hear that enough. And so on the air, I wanted to pause long enough to say you make a difference. We appreciate you. I have gotten to know each of you, and you put me to work today because I had to pray real hard not to get emotional. But you both have had such an impact in your respective cities. I just saw a Facebook posting, Pastor, where you took a young kid came into the precinct saying that he wanted to stay out of trouble. Mm-hmm. And you and a partner took him to sign up and then went and bought the young man sneakers.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, he came into the district and he said, listen, I want to stay out of trouble this summer. Last summer I was in a lot of trouble. Can you help me out?
Mm-hmm.
And we, of course, one of the things that we try to do is have resources that we know are available to young people, mm-hmm. so that we can connect them right away. And one of those resources was the YMCA at 52nd and Chestnut.
Yeah.
Took him around there right away. I know the director, Miss Terry, who used to be my Sunday school teacher as a kid, mm-hmm. And her staff immediately gave him paperwork for his parents to sign, and all they had to do was bring it back in, and those next couple of months would be free to him.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're not talking about things that, you know, we always hear about there being such disruptive and destruction and dissension between our officers and the community. Well, I'm here to tell you that we have the finest. We have the finest in Reverend G. Lamar Stewart Sr., and we have the finest in Chief Melvin Russell from Baltimore, who we rode on this bus what felt like for days and hours. 14 hours on a plane, you get to know everybody very well. But to have heard him say publicly, he did a TED talk, and I'm going to have him talk a little bit more about that. And all I kept remembering him say over and over again is we had to change our stinking thinking. You know, I had to get our officers to a place where they were no longer just visiting the community, but they understood the community. And we were going to develop the muscle that said serve, and as much as we had developed the muscle that said protect. So I just wanted to say thank you,
you.
To both of you. For choosing, because you could have chosen differently.
Absolutely.
Choosing to serve in cities that aren't always full of brotherly love.
Talk about it.
Right? Or sisterly affection. And cities where, you know, people might come down there to eat, but they don't want to stay all the time. But you have chosen. You've chosen. And that's why when I looked at this scripture, and I'm like, yeah, but they are the hope.
Wow.
They are the hope. It's the chiefs and the pastors, you know, that decide to protect and to serve, that make a difference in rebuilding the village. Mm. Because I do believe that part of why we are struggling is the absence of God, number one. But it's also this fragmented village. We used to say, you know, I remember growing up, my neighbors used to see something going on, and it wasn't a question. Mm. It wasn't even a question. Mm-hmm. You know, if I did something, my parents were just like, when I get home, I know, you know, Miss Betty or, you know, Mr. And it was how we address that village aspect. Not really there. So I want to thank both of you for doing what you do. Now, I have all these questions, and I wanted to go back and forth with you, so I don't know that I'm even keeping up to the script today because I just want there to be genuine conversation. Sure. So I'm going to hear first from Chief. If you would share, you 35 years.
Almost 38, but
we're almost 38. Well, okay. Yeah, Michelle, just 3 years off. And then 3 years in police time is like, what, dog years?
It's forever.
It's good. So talk about the journey and what it meant for you in the fair city that you love of Baltimore and why you stayed to rebuild the relationships.
Yeah, so for me, I guess it was a natural fit. You know, being born Baltimorean, mentored and raised in what you call that village mentality, that village-type community. I lived in many, many rough neighborhoods in Baltimore City. I was not a privileged child, never had the silver spoon. But that was that village all in by everyone.
Yeah.
You know, today I call it, I've taken this and I use it over and over again from one of my spiritual fathers out of Houston, Texas, Doug Stringer, relational equity. Right. We had then, when we talk about that village mentality, we had relational equity, and you talked about how we don't have that anymore.
Right.
We may know you live in our neighborhood.
Right.
But we don't know you like it was when I was coming up, and mm-hmm. we dare not put our hands on one another's children like you were allowed to do when I was coming up. Mm. And as a matter of fact, we are fearful of one another. We're fearful of our young people. So, but I was very fortunate to be raised during that area. And during an era when you can actually see officers that were protecting and they were serving and they were actually friendly.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was a natural fit, especially growing up in tough neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. The needs were everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But the people, the officers, they were all part of the same woven community, and they dealt with those needs in such a loving, compassionate way. So it was a natural fit seeing the need, seeing professionals being able to bring resolvement to those needs. For me, it was a natural fit to grow up and want to be one of them, because back then, not every little boy, but this little boy wanted to be a police officer, right? And so I grew up, and I went into the field that I so love, and I loved it so much. You know, I started when I was 19 years old, became what's called a police cadet, not old enough to be a police officer, but I loved it so much. I was studying it, and I was just absorbing everything by these elders in my life. Now I'm police officers, and here I am, a young kid, and I went on to become class valedictorian, the first African-American male to do that in this class. And I'm still waiting for another African-American male to take that crown from me. So I don't take that lightly. So I have become a product of my environment in a positive way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, powerful.
Yes. Come on, Pastor. Well, yes, sir.
Well, you know, born and raised here in Philadelphia. I'm 32 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I left Philly when I was 17. I went into the Army mm-hmm. for 6.5 years. Served time in Iraq during the first deployment.
Thank you for serving.
Appreciate it.
I was just going to say the same thing.
So I deployed in 2003 during OF1. Came back to Philly in 2008, trying to figure out what it was I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. For about 7 years, I was in real estate in corporate America as a regional manager for a real estate firm here in the city. Of course, in 2010, I began pastoring. I was called to Taylor Moore Baptist Church to be the senior pastor there. For the last 7 years, I've been at Taylor. By way of my home church, Enon Tabernacle Baptist Church. Nonetheless, while pastoring, while in real estate, I still didn't feel a sense of fulfillment. While I was fulfilled in pastoring, I felt like there was something more I needed to do for my city. Now, you know, I'm a pastor, so I got to get into some spiritual language, and I started to hone in on what my spiritual gifts were at the time. And I realized one of my primary gifts was service. Mm-hmm. And so I pastor, but it's not the preaching and teaching that motivates me to pastor. It's the service, it's the helping people, it's seeing people's lives change based upon how God uses me. Well, I saw a need based upon kind of the breach relationship between the community and police here in Philadelphia where my spiritual gift could be used in serving. I have a mentor who's one of the leaders here in this department who paved the way for me to be able to come onto this job about 2.5 years ago. And I'm here now, and you know, the Lord has really blessed and allowed me to be who I am. There is a culture in law enforcement. Some of it is good. Some of it is not so good. What I've tried to do is remain true to who I am and not lose my own personal convictions in the process to make sure that God is being glorified, that people were being served, and that I could be a model of what serving and protecting is all about.
Yeah. Good. And I know as our listeners, because I'm telling you, once they learned that y'all were on the show, I got more questions. And so, listeners, I cannot ask them all. But what they wanted to know primarily is, well, how? How do you serve as, you know, pastor and assistant pastor and be a police officer? Like, how?
I'll let you take that question, but I'm going to just say this, how not? How can you not?
Sure. Ooh. Yeah, I think both. I think it has to go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
And if we can use some biblical language, think about Nehemiah as he was kind of building the wall.
Yeah.
He had one hand on the sword and one hand on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, pastors and preachers, we only apply that to building the church. Mm. But really, that's about building the community and building the people who are from that community. And so that may take different forms depending on what your calling is. There are some pastors who are only pastoring. They're the senior pastor. God told them to do that. But then there are some who maybe God is saying, you need to be bivocational and look at other opportunities where I may use you to do some positive things. So for me, this is an extension of the Taylor experience. And I believe Taylor is blessed as I'm being a blessing to the community.
Wonderful.
You said that perfectly. If I could add anything, which I shouldn't be adding anything to that 100% spot on answer. You know, when we talk about Jesus and I see Jesus, you didn't see Jesus in the temple that much, right?
Right.
There's scripture after scripture where it talks about him amongst the people, amongst the people. And when he was amongst the people, he wasn't always turning over tables. He was seeing to the needs of the people, tending to their needs, protecting them.
Right.
And serving them.
Right.
Right. And so who else is amongst the people but the peace officer? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. So,
right.
So one of the things I love about Jesus, whenever he was out amongst the multitude, he was moved with compassion, the Bible says, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, an effective police officer has to have empathy, compassion, and that's something that's missing today in too many police officers. We're so hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I commend Reverend Stewart, because he came on. Look, I was already a police before he was born. All right, right.
I wasn't gonna say that.
Yeah. And so to see the paradigm shift, I was fortunate to be immersed in a culture when policing was as much service as it was protection. Right. And then I disappeared for 20 years in the narcotics, and when I reemerged, all I saw was protection and overzealous at best, or at least with that. So most police officers did not understand, because of the dynamics that happened 20 years prior, and that was zero tolerance. They did not understand what protecting and serving meant. They were out of balance. They didn't understand what the culture was before, when all police officers were community-oriented, minded. Mm-hmm. And to see this young pastor, police officer, I mean, Philly, you better shout from the mountaintops, because I'm telling you, for officers to come on at a late stage, because I'm a dinosaur, when he did, and to have that mindset, oh my goodness, you better appreciate this gem right here, because you cannot find that. That is truly a diamond in your rough.
I said there's hope, right?
Yeah.
Because we do have, you know, Pastor Lamar coming in and making a difference now. But we have folks that, like you, still hanging in there to remind, because that's also what I think is missing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the dinosaur. It's the lack of wisdom being shared between the generations. Mm-hmm. And everybody thinks that they know better. Well, you know, you weren't here and it wasn't as hard.
Right.
Well, yes, it was. It was civil rights. There was a whole.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There was just as much violence there. The difference is that there was also as much community.
That's right.
There was just as much community. And so, speaking of that, in particular, you hold the church accountable to rebuild. I heard that in your TED Talks. We need to have more of a front seat instead of a spectator's perspective on how do we rebuild this community and relation. So if I can get each of you to talk about that, but let's start with you, Chief.
Okay. Yeah, so as I looked at that and saw the dynamics, remember, I was rethrust. In the mid-80s, I went into narcotics, and all I cared about was chasing that next kingpin. And so I was gone for 20 years. Even though I still lived in the community, I got saved in the community during that period. I started pastoring. But I didn't see the paradigm shift. Many, many paradigm shifts. But for the topic right now, I didn't even see the paradigm shift of churches.
Wow.
That pendulum swing where they went from community churches to commuter churches. And when I reemerged, all of a sudden I saw this tremendous gulf not just between police and community, because it was definitely a gulf, more so than when I went in to narcotic, but there was also a gulf between the church and the community, right? And so one of the things as God began to deal with me, I said, well, wow, how do we deal with this? How do we get the churches and pastors to move from the mindset of building their thrones and their kingdoms and their territories? How do we move them back from that and get them where they once were? Wow. And that was amongst the people in the community, a part of the community.
Yeah.
Instead of just driving in, setting up shop, and then driving back out, right?
Wow. Right.
And so one of the things I thought about is how do we, first of all, pastors and clergy and church folk, let me just say that, ought to have compassion, ought to have a spirit of servitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ways that I utilized that to help my officers was, you know what I'm going to do? We're going to start a chaplaincy. And we piloted it first. We piloted it first. Yeah. So we took pastors to get them outside their four walls and just said, listen, could you not get in the car with some of my roughest police officers, the one that do not know how to respect the community, don't know how to engage. As a matter of fact, they're abusive. Can you get in the car with them? Because at the end of the day, I know when you're riding around in a roving confession box, it's hard and difficult, right, to be nasty towards your community. Because you're always knowing that that pastor's not saying anything to you, but he's there as a ministry of presence.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I got to straighten my back up. Mm-hmm. I've got to have patience and listen to the community. I've got to do what I've been trained to do instead of what I want to do and even been corrupt to do by senior guys that are now in the streets and now taking shortcuts, and it's just tearing up our community from a public safety standpoint, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so that's something we built out, and we're so proud of that. Let me say this. How do you take officers, and churches are really important in that, how do you take officers and put them back into a mindset of service? They're already in an environment, but for me, it meant take those who carriers of service and bring them into their culture, bring them into their environment, right?
Okay.
Because they were in the community already,
right?
But the service piece was missing. So then we started putting pastors in the car.
Okay.
We started telling our communities, you know what, come have officer appreciation every single month at the district. I know I'm a little off topic, but I'm helping this right
now.
So come have it every month, not once a year, some ceremonial thing, every month. And that was a difficult sell because the community didn't like our police, right?
Mm-hmm.
You must be crazy, Major. We ain't doing that. We don't even like them.
Right.
And I said, you want the type of officer that will service you.
Wow.
It will be easier if you came to them on their turf for them to transform than you, when I can't watch them, go out into the community and there's nothing to hold them accountable or monitor. Do that. So they bought into it, and before you knew it, I had 130 cops under me at the time running a district, and all 130 minus two, I kicked them out of the district because they would not conform. But the rest of them absolutely conformed and end up being tremendous, tremendous servers of the community to the point where we were now a family, right? That's Officer So-and-so. He's part of our family in this community.
Wow.
Right? And so it's the same thing for the churches. Same thing for the churches. Pastors, get out of from behind your four walls. Stop worrying about your Wednesday nights and just Sunday nights, right? Kids are going looking for real families. They're looking for family atmosphere. And even as they join churches, they're dismayed and they're disgruntled because when I go into a gang, I got a family 24/7.
Yeah.
How come when I join a church, I got a family only on Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Only on Sunday, right? This ain't what I was looking for. I was looking for somebody I can lean on, depend on 24/7. And so we've got a lot of pastors now and deacons and just email. We got a lot of people now that are in our cars to the point where we used to have seven ceremonial pastors or clergy, I'm sorry, chaplains, going back to the 70s and now. And I'm still pushing it. Right now we're about 157.
Wow.
And I love Philadelphia because they came in and taught at my first academy. I built out an academy for the chaplaincy. Mm. And I had my Reverend Santos came down with his core group, and they did some dynamite teaching. And I could not believe they had 80 chaplains for this city. And we had seven. I said, man, we got a lot of work to do. And so, Dan, if you're listening, we're up to 157. I know they've rose to 100, but they're doing phenomenal work. I commend the city of Philadelphia, Brotherly Love, and the work they're doing.
Wow. And to hear that the chaplaincy?
The chaplaincy. Mm-hmm.
Which is to take the roughest police officers and partner them with clergy.
Right.
Now, that's a conversion.
Oh, yeah.
Ride around knowing, I would like... Okay, I can't do that. So just the editing and the modification changes my mindset. And if it changes my language, then it'll change my behavior.
Okay.
And then, and ultimately, I then become the person that can serve and not just protect, which is what I heard you say.
And because we got to get Rev in here. And it opens up the officer, because as officers, you know this, Rev, being an officer, that we're very provident and proud individuals.
Absolutely.
We don't need to hear from you. And as a side partner, often we'll tell them more than we tell our spouses.
Mm.
That's sad, but often we will. But then there's some deep, dark things we won't share with anybody. What I found is, and God didn't show me, that's in God and his wisdom, that these chaplains in the car with the police officers, because they go from being spies through the eyes of the police to, oh, my God, I got my personal consultant. I got my personal clinician. I got my personal counselor. And now they open up, and these chaplains have taken these officers offline, saved marriages, created, helped them with their finances, got their kids back on track. So they treated them like a human being and made them whole again. Here's in a nutshell, and I'll end on this. Here's what they've done. They've given them something back that some of them never had, and yet they're charged to give away every day. Peace, mm-hmm. right? How do you come to work and give away something you don't possess yourself? Because you can only give away what you have, right? And what they've done is restore, and in some cases, just given them because they didn't never had it, peace. So now they're more effective peace officers.
I think he just tapped into his preacher voice.
Come on,
Rev.
I was waiting. But both of you eventually, because I, you know, that's the tendency.
Wow.
But yes, Pastor,
you know, I entered into this profession at a time where you almost have to choose sides, or that's where the perception is.
Yeah.
So you're either Black Lives Matter or you're Blue Lives Matter,
right.
or you're Brown Lives Matter, sure. or you're this Lives Matter. But you have to choose one.
Mm.
So if I'm Blue Lives Matter, this is the perception.
Right.
I'm not saying this is fact, but if I'm Blue Lives Matter, then I can't say Black Lives Matter.
Right.
If I'm Black Lives Matter, I can't say Blue Lives Matter.
Right.
Come on, dog. Come on.
Or I can say All Lives Matter, but I'm afraid to say Black Lives Matter, but that's included in the all.
Right.
You know? So I've entered in policing during this time where there's a tension between those realities.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's important for my generation of officers who are coming onto this job, and there are two different persons I'm speaking to. There are certain officers who are coming to this job now who are from the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have those, in my opinion, who are coming from outside of the inner city.
Right.
And they're coming into a place that they may have never been exposed to before.
Right.
How do you know how to serve in an environment that you've never been exposed to?
Mm.
Are our academies preparing you outside of just the tactical training,
right.
but just for some of the social issues you address?
Hmm.
You know, a person who decides, hey, I want to be a teacher, when they come into the inner city and teach, they're being more than just a teacher.
Yes, they are.
They're forced to be a social worker. They're forced to be a parent at times.
Oh,
they're forced to be a counselor, so many different things. I think one of the challenges now is that we have officers who are coming on who think their only job is to arrest, or their only job is to do the tactical stuff, which is a part of our reality.
Mm.
But that's one facet of that reality. I kind of feel at this point, you know, I think about the pedestrian stop that I do, during the day-to-day of my job. Many times I'm running into the same people every single day. The courts may decide to allow that person to be released back even after they're arrested. So my mentality now is, do I spend my entire 8 hours trying to figure out who can I arrest? Or do I spend some of that time trying to figure out what resources can I provide to you? If I'm as an officer, as a first responder, part of our mission statement is partnering with other community partners.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go to CareerLink and establish some relationships there, or if I go to Home Depot and establish some relationships there, if I go to some other organizations and establish relationships, that those organizations may be willing to give persons a chance who may have a little bit on their record.
Right.
Then when I come to that corner, maybe this time is not an investigation. It's just a mere encounter where I'm saying to you, listen, man, I see you out here every day. I don't want you to think every time I come here is just to investigate you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see you do better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to be here next week.
Yeah.
What can I offer you that can help change your course of action? So I think community policing and really building the bridge is that when people see police coming, it should not only be for investigation,
mm-hmm.
but it should also be to bring resources that may help change their life. That's what I see my role is. Now, everybody may have a different definition of what policing is, and I let everybody be guided by their own convictions. But for myself, that's what I believe a good model is.
But that's what brings back the village,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Because then the officer isn't there just to beat me up, but he's here to help me.
And through my actions, I'm saying you matter.
Yes.
So I don't necessarily have to say Black Lives Matter or this Lives Matter. I'm just, through my actions, there's a shift of culture now that says you matter to me.
Mm.
So now I don't see you just as the badge or as the department you represent. I know your name, and I know it from a positive, you know, light. So now it's not the cops are coming. It's Jones is coming.
Right.
It's not the cops is coming, but Russell's coming or Stewart's coming. And I know that's going to be a positive thing. Now, he might have to investigate me, but I know he's going to do the right thing when he comes. Mm-hmm. Or this may just be a conversation, but I know that he has the heart or she has the heart of the community in mind.
It gets back to respect.
Absolutely.
Right? Because now they at least respect who you are.
Sure.
And say, okay, well, he's upright. I don't have to agree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even have to like.
Mm-hmm.
But I can respect that he's doing his job and how he's getting it done.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Makes all the difference in the world. Makes all the difference in the world. What I'm hearing you say, and then I think about, you know, even corporate, and I'm not going to go there too long, but the absence of some things. It's not just unique to the police, to law enforcement. The absence of caring about people and investing in people. And the first thing that we normally pull resources from is educating, teaching, and helping individuals get better at their roles.
Sure.
But we want them to go take on two or three more.
Mm.
Right? We go, oh, here you go. We just downsized this, and these four or five things belong to you. But, you know, that equipping you to prepare you to do it with excellence, we don't have those resources no more. Yeah, so that's something that is – that's why I said it's impacting, you know, our companies, our countries, and our communities. It's not one or the other.
Mm.
But there is still hope because we have a pastor, Reverend Lamar Stewart Sr., and Chief – Melvin Russell's, who are making the difference. I have to get to break. I was looking. I'm like, oh, yes, like I've got to get to break. If you're listening, you want to stay tuned in. We're talking about men of honor who protect and serve. And we have the finest here, the finest in Philly, and our own Reverend G. Lamar Stewart Sr. We have the finest here from all the way from Baltimore. And that, you know, that's love when somebody drives like that, y'all. None other than Chief Melvin Russell. I need you to stay tuned as we come back to talk about their perspective on what it means to protect and what it means to serve. This is Michelle Speaks right here on 860 AM. Be back in a moment.
This Wednesday, 1 p.m., drop everything that you're doing and tune in right here, the heart of the city with me, Malik Boyd. This is a no-holds-barred show. Real issues, real discussions, real solutions. And with some great guests, hot topics, and some surprises mixed in, I promise you this will be a show you don't want to miss. The Heart of the City with me, Malik Boyd, Wednesday, 1 p.m., right here on 860.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be. Weinerman Pain and Wellness, on the web at WeinermanPainandWellness.com.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today. Today's broadcast is brought to you by the Philly Labor RX Injured Workers Pharmacy Network, featuring PPC Pharmacy, First Choice Pharmacy, and Precision Scripts, providing injured workers with premium products and services from the point of injury through the entire healing process. The Philly Labor RX Pharmacy Network cares about injured workers.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Introducing the YMCA. What, you already know the why? Or so you think. Sure, you know the why for a swim, a workout, even a game of hoops. But did you know we're more than that? We're a cause. When you take your jump shot at the why, someone else is getting job training. Take a cardio class while kids are in an after-school enrichment program. Practice your downward-facing dog as a teen practices her leadership skills. That's the why. We work with people no matter their age, income, or background, and give them the opportunity to learn, grow, and thrive, all with one simple goal in mind, to strengthen our community. And we've got so much more that does just that. So while you might think of the Y as that place for lifting weights, we're also about lifting entire communities. Introducing the Y. We're so much more than a place. We're a cause. Visit YMCA.net/more.
Welcome back to Men of Honor Who Protect and Serve. If you've missed the first half, I can't even begin to recap just what has been covered so far, but I promise you to have it posted. But to know that these men have given so freely of themselves to make a difference in their respective communities. And they're talking honestly and candidly about what it means to be both clergy and to serve. And what I love that you said, Pastor G, I can almost say Pastor G, I won't go there because, you know, I like issues and I don't need telememorial saying, don't disrespect my pastor on the air. So I'm going to do the whole name. Is when you said you have to choose one, but you don't.
Right.
It's not Black Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter. It's all lives matter. And better yet, your actions speak.
Right.
I don't have to wear a banner or a t-shirt that says what matters. My actions will show what matters. And so I wrote that one down. It's not about, my grandmother said, may the work that I've done speak for me. And literally, that's what I hear you saying about that perspective. Just do a little more on that, and then we're going to go right into protect and serve around how you see that playing out in the community.
Yeah, if to me, my thought is, if one says that all lives matter, then you should be able to say Black Lives Matter.
Right.
Or you should be able to say blue in that moment. Mm-hmm. I have three children. If one of my children in that moment feel as if they're undervalued or they're devalued or they don't feel important in that moment, as a father, I don't say, well, I love y'all all. I look at that one and I say, well, Trey, you matter too. Junior, you matter too.
Yeah.
Gabriella, you matter too. So I can look at the one in that moment who feels that maybe something within the system of our household is causing them not to feel they matter. I can look at them if I genuinely believe that they all matter to me.
Absolutely. Although I think Gabriella is kind of outranking the boys, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I've already seen the Facebook posting. I'm like, did the boys have no chance? They have no chance, no matter how cute they are, no matter what. Gabriella is now the queen supreme.
Yes, indeed.
In the household. But speaking of that, you both have sons. What does the inhales and the exhales happen? What does it mean for you to see what's happening, to be in law enforcement, and then to look at your sons? What happens in that moment for you? And let's start with you, Chief.
Yeah, so as you know, we have a blended family of eight kids.
Right.
For the record, my wife wanted one more, so baby, eight's enough. But we have eight kids, and six of them are African-American boys.
Yeah.
And so for me, it is real important to always be conscious, especially I'm dealing with African-American young men all the time, to make sure I'm that ultimate role model, to make sure they don't have to look anywhere else. It's okay looking somewhere else, but making sure their dad is fulfilling what it really means to be a king. Because my role is to grow them up into kingship. I call them all princes. You know, so I have my Prince Melvin, I have my Prince Ryan, I have my Prince LJ, So I have all these princes, and so at the end of the day, I need to be the one not solely, but primarily, that they can come to and be able to come with any discussion.
Right.
They need to be able to see a man treating their queen properly, so they roll into that. So I just have to be everything. So I'm always conscious of the fact that I have young black men, when they're not so young, to 10 to 30 years old,
mm-hmm.
that are growing up, and they look to dad for all the answers, right? And it was unique going through this whole Black Lives Movement matters, because some of them, they all have their own personalities, they have their own opinions, and to hear one say one thing, dad, how do you feel about, because a lot of them didn't like police during that era,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I come home and we have that dialogue, and it's like, what do you mean you don't like police? Well, you're different. You don't count because you get it right. And so we had to have that whole discussion about lumping people in and so forth and so on. So, yeah, so it just, for me, it means to be the constant role model. If I could just say that.
Absolutely. And to have you present makes all the difference to answer those tough questions. When it's, you know, well, what about this and what about that and how is that happening? And then to be able to come home and have that conversation makes all the difference in the world. All right, Pastor.
You know, I would say the same thing. My oldest son is 14 years old. My baby son is 2. And, of course, I have a 6-month-old daughter. But for my sons, I think it's important for them to see in me the model of what service looks like,
mm-hmm.
what activism looks like. Because a part of what I believe I do, I believe I'm an activist in the context of law enforcement.
Right.
Because I see myself as a game changer or as a culture mm-hmm. shifter, mm-hmm. if I can use that terminology mm-hmm. for a moment. And so part of them seeing me live out my purpose, even when living out your purpose may be unpopular in the context in which you serve, even if your convictions are unpopular in the context in which you serve, teaching my sons it's okay not to conform to how people want you to be in that culture.
Yeah.
But sticking to what you believe based upon your biblical world perspective, based upon your purpose. And so that's important to me. But also in all that, balancing living out purpose, but also family time.
Yeah.
I don't want my sons to see me be a public success and a private failure. And so part of that is balancing what does it mean to be pastor, police officer, real estate investor.
Yeah.
But also, what does it look like to be husband, father, family man, spending time at home?
Right.
Have not always gotten that right. And so for me, modeling that now and really honing in on balance mm-hmm. is definitely critical.
Yeah.
And being transparent about failures, being transparent about successes, where did I get it wrong, and goals that I'm making for the future.
Yeah. And I imagine with both of you having such a willing heart to serve that you are pulled upon frequently, and it's probably not even the word to best describe how leveraged. I just don't even know the word. So, that family time that you talked mm-hmm. about, it's, well, don't give it all out there. We, you know, we still selfishly need you here, too. So I'm so glad to hear, you know, you talk about that and say, look, I need to get it right. There are days it's great, and then there are days it's not. I had that conversation even with women around work-life balance, because that's the thing. You know, do you work? Do you stay home? And it's the balance of the day. It depends on what the day calls for. So it's not going to be balanced the same way every day.
Sure.
But if overall you can look at it and go, I did pretty good this week.
Sure, absolutely.
I did pretty good. I tried to get it in. But this week it made a difference. So protect and serve. What is your definition of protect and serve? And how do you see that? How do you model that? And then how do you see that across your brothers in blue?
Well, first of all, let me go backwards. So I see it out of balance today.
There you
right.
Are.
So when I look across the landscape, and not just my city, but across the nation, I mean, and I'm not saying anything that's a secret or a surprise to anybody. All you have to do is cut on the news the last couple of years and you see what's happened across our nation. So I say this in my TED Talk, and Michelle, you know this. I know that we have gotten so out of balance. And again, I really rest this on many things, but I think one of the primary igniters of the way culture has been shaped today in policing has to do with that zero tolerance.
Okay.
The day that you unleashed police on its own community and said, lock up everything that moves for anything that matters, was the day that you began to form a breach.
Right.
You began to destroy trust, between the community and the law enforcement community and the private community. So all of a sudden what you had happen is you had officers moving from protectors, from partners with the community, and now they became occupiers, right?
Yeah.
So became more militarized. And so we put so much emphasis on that protection because what we did is, in essence, and I'm not saying all, but as a general overall landscape as you look at it, we moved away from that service piece, the things that Pastor's talking about, right? So at the end of the day, everything, we stopped listening to our community,
right?
All we wanted to do was just eliminate the problem as fast as we could, and that usually meant you going in bracelets.
Right.
We stopped listening. We stopped doing things that were of the service type of characteristics that we're supposed to carry. So for me, what I have been, not even struggling, but I've been really, really pushing the agenda through my own agency and across the country, is we have to get back in balance. Right? And I've been doing that on both sides of the fence. I've been taking that message on both sides because we as law enforcement officers can't do it by ourselves.
Right.
So we need, sometimes we need the community to come in and help us
and
learn how, what it means to serve. So sometimes it means as we serve, can you go out of your way to praise that? Now, some people will say, that's ridiculous. That's your job. Listen, this is a different era.
Absolutely.
Right? These kids that are coming up now and being police officers, outside of what I'm sitting here, this marvel of a man here, right? And Pastor Stewart, Officer Stewart. These kids are coming from the same gene pool that the rest of the population belongs to, right? It's technology, it's Facebook, it's social media, all these things that shape their world that did not have an opportunity to shape my world.
Right.
My world was more touchy-feely, in-your-face, tangible acts of love.
Mm-hmm.
Today, everything, you can be a bully behind a screen, you can be all kind of things, right?
Right.
And so that's the same gene pool that we pull officers out of. Right. That has nothing to do with engagement.
Right.
Has nothing to do with serving. Right.
Hmm.
And then we throw them in a police car and say, now go out and engage the community and serve them. Right.
Wow.
They didn't even grow up that way.
Wow.
For me, it was stay outside. Play with your friends.
Play with your friends.
Right. And so we learned that social skill set.
Hmm.
And that's why I don't even fault the police officer today. It's not a learned skill.
Mm.
I mean, it's not an innate skill that they grew up with. Now it has to be a learned skill. And I don't care if you go through an academy. Most academies that I found, they don't teach you how to engage the community.
Right.
They don't. We have this thing, and I'm sure you have it in Philly and all over the country, foot posts and walk your beat. We tell officers to do that, get out your car. What does that mean?
Right.
How do I engage? Because all this is rolled into service. How do I do that? It could be 50 guys standing on the corner, and guys are terrified of them because there's another dynamic that has happened, at least in Baltimore City. When I grew up, we were all from Baltimore City. Today, we're from all over the world. Right, police officers that police Baltimore City, right? So when you ask me when I was growing up, I would tell you about a part of Baltimore City, whether it be Park Heights, and these are unfamiliar to your audience, but Park Heights, Westport, Emerson Village, but they're all parts of Baltimore City.
Right.
Today you say, I'm from PA, I'm from Miami, I'm from California, I'm from Puerto Rico, right? And so you got these people who are immersed into a culture that they're not from, don't understand.
Right.
And yet you're asking them to serve. And number two, they don't know how to serve because no one's ever taught them how to engage because they grew up in their bedroom playing video games, going to school, playing with their kids. And unless you were an athlete and developed some type of skill set,
right.
you just don't have it. Mm. You just don't have it.
So they're missing social skills. They're missing being able to engage and collaborate. And what they have learned is more along the lines is, I don't want to say defend because that's not it, but the protect muscle, as you described it, is so much stronger because there's nothing built around the serve muscle.
It's easy to enforce. That comes natural. You know, we were born in and shaped in. To be assertive and all those things, that comes natural.
Mm.
But to have compassion and empathy and actually serve, that's not natural.
Wow.
Right? So you got to learn how to do that. And if you didn't come up in an environment like we did growing up,
right?
Oh, my goodness. I pray for these kids every day. I pray for them every day. That's why I'm in awe. I really am in awe of Pastor. I was going to say Pastor G. But Pastor,
I know, right? I'm sure I'm going to get feedback about that. But you gotta defend me. That's all in love. That's all.
It is.
Love.
It's all good. It's all good.
All in love.
Pastor G for the day is good.
That's it. So your thoughts on what it means to protect and to serve?
I got to piggyback off what you just, because I want to say ditto.
Yeah.
Absolutely 100%.
Yeah.
I think, if I can piggyback and just add upon what he said around the service piece, is can I serve you even if I don't agree with you?
Mm.
Can I serve you even when our philosophical views are different?
Yeah.
Can I serve you even when our political views are different.
Yeah.
Can I still serve you? If I'm at a protest, can I still serve you? Can I protect you even when our views are different?
Mm.
Can I not police you, but can I protect you?
Yeah.
Can I protect you even when I don't agree with your position?
Hmm.
And I think those are questions that we have to raise and within the culture of our environments. Have we created these polar opposite situations where you have to stand on this side, you have to stand on this side, and there's a line, and you protect this line, and you stay over there, and the division still remains?
Mm.
Protecting and serving is not something I started when I came on this job 2.5 years ago.
Right.
Protecting and serving happens in my home. Yeah. It happens in my church.
Right.
As a pastor, I'm a guardian. I'm a doorkeeper. Mm. I'm a protector of the flock. At Taylor Moore Baptist Church, I wish I could tell you that I like every member. Yeah. I love everyone, but I don't like every member. I don't agree with every member.
Right.
We don't all share the same world perspectives, but I protect everyone.
Yeah.
And I serve everyone the same.
Mm.
So whether I'm serving a member who is from the worst part of North Philly, or whether it's someone who came in from Montgomery County, I still serve them the same.
Mm.
That translates for me in my day-to-day patrol. Whether I'm at 60th and Spruce, or whether I'm at 30th and Market, it doesn't matter. Whether I'm at Rittenhouse Square, or whether I'm at 22nd and Cecil B. Moore, I talk to people the same way. I look at them the same. I serve them the same because it's a part of who I am. And I agree with Chief on this that, you know, we have to think through our training models to make sure that we're not just talking the protecting piece and the tactical piece, but that we're getting into, because when you look at every other industry, whether we're talking about hotel, the tourism industry, whether we're talking about the banking industry, whether we're talking about any other service-based industry, they commit a large amount of resource to training on service. How do you appropriate service?
Absolutely.
And I think we need to kind of have more conversations regarding that.
Can I just dovetail just real quick?
Because
that was so awesome. And just so you know, one of the things I keep hearing pastors talk about is starts at home. And he's absolutely right. You know, so take those same type of protective and serve, that balance that you have in home. It doesn't stop when you leave the house, right?
It
has to carry. Service is not a choice.
Hmm.
It's not a choice, right? Service is absolutely an expected and reasonable service that we're supposed to render, right?
Mm.
You're supposed to do it.
Yeah. Sure.
Just like you're serving in your home. And that's why I always tell my communities or my officers, you better service them like that your father, your brother, your sister, your mom, whatever, your auntie. Service them like that's family.
Right?
Because you wouldn't treat your family the way you're treating the community right now. Service them. Service them. And people, I don't know if you hear this, Pastor, but I would hear throughout my career, you ain't no real police unless you get complaints on you. Right? You out there protecting and you locking up people. You're supposed to get complaints from time and time again.
Right?
And I push back on that. Because, you know, I stopped counting around 90, 92, when you were just a little lad. 92, and I probably had about 5,000 arrests already. And these weren't just little petty arrests. Most of them were drugs and shootings and stuff like that. And not one. And a lot of them were violent arrests, even being in a battle with a lot of these guys, shootouts with these guys. But not one individual ever lodged a complaint against me. Why? Because even in the midst of enforcing, protecting the community from them, I still serviced them. I did not go overboard.
Right.
Right. So I heard him say earlier, I don't have to agree with you. I don't even have to like what you're doing, but I still have to respect you as a human being and give you the same type of service as anybody else, as long as it warrants. And if it means I'm a little rough, at the end of the day, the guys, the gals understand. I understand why you had to do that, because I was being a butthole.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate it. But what I do also appreciate, you didn't go overboard.
Right.
Once you had me
just
under control,
to check
so do.
Me.
Right. So I appreciate that kind of service. I can live with that service.
Sure.
You'll never hear me complain about you, sir.
Sure.
But that's the same thing we went back to when you were talking about respect.
Absolutely.
Right.
So you respected them as a person and still honored. I have to do my job, and you're allowing me now that I have to do my job probably to a different level than I wanted to.
Yeah, sure.
But it's still a part of me having to do my job without excess.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the corporate world, there's always this diversity and inclusion, in as much as they're talking about customer service, because customer service is also the difference maker. How you service me, there's a bank on every corner, or there's a this on every corner. So what's going to be the difference maker? And it is how you service me. each of you talked about what's innate and what's not. How is it then that we start to build this relationship when some things may be absent in the community, right? Because we're not doing all of this at home anymore either, right? So the community has played a role in this. It's not being taught or reinforced necessarily in the academy. Mm-hmm. What's potential solves? What's potential solves around building this relationship back between the community and our law enforcement?
So for me, it's just it's simple. You know, the good word says, if you want friends, show yourself friendly.
Yeah.
Right? So if you want to build relational equity, and everything for me is based off of relationships. If you don't have relationships, if you don't have equity in the community, you have nothing.
Right.
If you don't have equity in your home, you have nothing. I'll show you dysfunction every single time. But when you take time out to build a relationship, and you do that through tangible acts of kindness, you do it through listening, there's a plethora of ways you can do that. But it starts with you showing yourself friendly and opening yourself up and showing yourself to be a peacekeeper of that community. Now, there's times you got to keep the peace by being an enforcer. But
right.
At the end of the day, can I get out of the car? I still love to this day, when I drive through the communities, I still get out, you know, being an old head and all. I'll get sit on the stoops. They're playing cards. They're
right.
playing checkers or whatever the case may be. I will still show myself friendly, you know, because when I came out of narcotics back in 07, I got to tell you, Pastor, when I would not jump out of the car, that's what the community says, but when I want to get out of the car, literally everybody on the corner, these young black males would throw themselves up against the wall, unless they were what we call dirty, then they would take off running.
Right.
But they throw themselves against the wall waiting for me to pat them down.
Wow.
And I just look at them because I already sized them up. I didn't see any bulges. Mm. You know, I felt comfortable and at ease. And I said, guys, I just want to rap with you.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, wow, we're not used to that.
Absolutely.
Right?
Cool.
Showing yourself friendly.
Yep.
So I'm watching our time. I've got about 40 seconds because I got to be mindful. Let's hear from you, Pastor G. Lamar still.
I think that's critical. Showing yourself friendly, being willing to be empathetic,
yeah,
being willing to be open for your perspective to change.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I came into this profession with one view. You know, mm-hmm. I grew up in Germantown and North Philly.
Yeah.
So I came up, I did not have a positive view of police.
Right.
But since coming onto this job, I see how hard the job is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm able to teach parishioners in my church and other young adults, listen, it's not what you think.
Amen.
Because they trust my heart.
Yeah.
And so I think both sides being willing to say, listen, I'm willing to change. I'm willing to hear. I'm willing to be empathetic. I'm willing to be sympathetic.
I told you I wanted to give every possible minute I could because these guests were so phenomenal. I'm going to close by again saying thank you to both of you for serving.
God bless you.
For serving Baltimore, for serving Philly, for serving as law enforcement and as pastors. Mm-hmm. We need you. You are the hope that will get us beyond our current circumstances. This has been a fantastic show. I am grateful to both Chief Melvin Russell for driving up from Baltimore, and I am certainly grateful, even if it's for the day, Pastor G, for being present with me. This is Michelle Speaks. For more, check out Michelle Speaks Radio on Facebook. Check out M Speaks Radio on Twitter and Instagram. And check out this podcast if you missed it. This is 860 AM. Michelle Speaks. Be blessed till next week.